If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcasting family, a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Best Kept Secret, the title track-ish from Ghostlight's forthcoming record, Best Kept Secrets, due out March 22nd. You no doubt have heard the buzz not just in the larger community for the band, but from us here at the Sound Podcast. The quintet, made up of Tom Hamilton Jr., Raina Mullen, Holly Bowling, Steve Lyons, and Scotty Zwang, is exciting to all our ears because it offers up something completely different than anything currently in our consciousness. So when we hear something fresh and exciting, well, yeah, we're psyched. Up until now, Ghostlight's music, in one form or another, has only been available through live performance. So this is a band whose fandom is totally built on word of mouth and the reputation of its members. Frankly, they probably didn't need to put out a record in a world of singles and streaming services, but we are so glad that they have. I caught up with Tom Hamilton Jr. in Madison, Wisconsin, on tour with the other monster band he's in, Joe Russo's Almost Dead, to talk about Best Kept Secrets, Ghostlight, and a bunch more. Our conversation started when I asked Tom quite candidly how the ride up until now, with all the hype and sold out shows, has been for him and the band.
I don't know, man. It's like there's a lot of work going on in there. You know, like we're all working real hard, and I don't know. I don't think any of us really are like paying too much attention to like that stuff because it's like it doesn't really matter. We still have, like, you know, we just have to kind of keep our heads down and just do good work, you know, and that's kind of like, I don't know, that's kind of always been like my, my MO of just like, you know, if people are like super into it or if they fucking hate it, either like whatever, it's like, you know, people are going to say cool things and people are going to talk shit. And it's like, you can't really let either one get in your head too much, you know? So I personally, I try not to like really pay that much attention. I mean, the crowds have been amazing. Like that stuff has been really overwhelming, to just like that kind of response and like, you know, seeing these sold out shows all over the place. It's just like, yeah, man, it feels great. It's nice. It's nice that we're doing it and we're, you know, we're all putting in the work together. It's just nice.
What's interesting about it is that, you know, there's no album, or until now there was no album. It really was about the five of your reputations as musicians coming together and playing music and people getting used to some of the songs and some of the set lists and stuff. But there really hasn't been anything that anybody can really hold their hat to except word of mouth. And your past performances, all of you as musicians in the scene. But it really has grown into this organic thing that's been huge. I mean, 2018 was a huge year for this band.
It was. I and we're hoping 2019 is you know, at least as good, you know.
Right.
And we're just gonna keep doing our thing, you know. I mean, it's just been a lot of work, man. You know, we try, you know. We spent a lot of time in the studio, and we spent a lot of time in a van. We spent a lot of time, you know, out on the stage. We spent a lot of time in the rehearsal space. Like, it's
right.
You know, we're just trying to do the whole thing, you know.
So let's talk about Best Kept Secrets. Is it a concept album? Not so much in content, but in that it really needs to be experienced in its entirety, front to back. I mean, it really is an album, right?
Yeah, it's definitely an album. I realize, you know, that the album is a dying thing or dead thing, maybe even, just with, you know, Spotify and iTunes and playlists or whatever. But, you know, I mean, it's still art and it's still, yeah, I mean, it's a thing, but it's not like, I mean, I don't think it has to be, you know, listened to like that. It's not that like tight of a thing, but like it is put together in a way that is, you know, if you choose to listen to it that way, you're going to have a different experience than if you listen to the songs like out of sequence and, you know, on their own. If you kind of like went a la carte,
right,
it would be a different experience. You know, I mean, I love film and I, when we were putting together the record, that was kind of the pacing of it, was looking at it like it was, looking at it like it was a film, or, you know, like I love like the long form storytelling, like the HBO shows and shit
right.
like that.
Yeah.
So like, you know, piecing together was, I had this like an aha moment, like watching the first season of True Detective. I don't know if you've watched that show, but it's that particular season is like, it's a beautiful thing the from front to back.
Right.
But it was cool because they used Louisiana in a way where it was almost like its own character in the show. And so they would have these like really like intense scenes with Woody Harrelson and McConaughey, and, you know, just like an insane story. But then they would have these like long shots of just like landscape.
Right.
And, you know, it was just like weird. It really did something to the mood. It like drove home a certain vibe. And yeah, it was just like these short, profound shots. And I was like, wow, you know, I just felt like that made sense for a record, you know, to like mm-hmm. something out like that, to have, you know, the songs with the lyrics being these, you know, the storyline, story driving scenes where you're, yeah. you know, it's the dialogue, the action or whatever. And then having, you know, a few of these instrumental tracks, which would act as, you know, long landscape shots and right. just kind of things that put you in, you know, put you in the world that you're experiencing. You know, it's like if you're, you know, you're, when you're focused in on the micro of something, you don't necessarily know what's going on around you. You lose context, you know? So I feel like zooming out and having those macro shots of mm-hmm. like a bigger sense of where you are, I think really helps the listener, you know? So like the record opens up, with a more instrumental thing, and it kind of like lulls you into the record, and then it just yeah. you know starts beating the hell out of you. And, it's pretty cool. Did they send you a?
Yeah. I actually want to go through the whole record song by song with my little anecdotes.
Okay.
But before we get to that, I just want to talk about things in a more macro kind of way first, if we could.
Sure.
The songs themselves all started, though, as instrumentals, right? I mean, the melodies, the chord progressions, and all of that stuff. And then you added lyrics where they were appropriate and where you thought they fit. Is that accurate from what I've read? That's the sense I got.
That's definitely a pretty accurate characterization. You know, the thing is, so Rain and I were coming from, you know, I mean, the record was certainly a completely collaborative experience.
Right.
But just as far as like bringing in, you know, like the initial ideas for the songs, a lot of them were Rain and I mean, we're the experienced songwriters in the band. And that's just kind of like, you know, that's the thing that we bring to the table. You know,
right.
everybody brings something to the table that really helps this band. And, you know, that just happens to be, you know, our thing, you know. But we both came from previously, you know, writing songs that were more singer-songwriter type stuff, where it's kind of about you, you know, like mm-hmm. you're writing about your experiences, your life, your feelings, you know. You know, Raina put an EP out right before she joined the American Babies, and it's a fucking beautiful EP. I had to suggest listening to it. But you know, it's definitely her
right.
and her thing, you know, and you know, a lot of the stuff I did with the Babies, not so much in the last record. It definitely kind of was a little more esoteric, but it, you know, there was, but a lot of it was definitely kind of like, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm going through. You know, that record was about my depression, my bouts with mental illness and, you know, how I was dealing with that. So it's, you know, there's a lot of ego, there's a lot of I, there's a lot of
right.
Looking in a mirror. But that wasn't what we wanted Ghostlight to be. You know, it was, we wanted it to be a band. So that's five people. And we also wanted it to be, you know, I don't know, like there was so many things were going on in the world,
right?
Socially.
Yeah.
When we were starting this thing, you know, so it was, like, I don't know, it, you know, they're just like inclusion and, you know, making sure different voices were being heard and used. So we didn't know what the fuck we wanted to say because we're not writing, you know, it's like, you're not writing for yourself. Right. You know, you're writing for everybody. You're writing for the five people in the band, and that's a much different situation. So, you know, we had, and still have, we have this Google Doc that we both just would just put shit in it. You know, like, you know, if I just had two words that meant something to me, or I would just put it in there, or if it was a sentence or a stanza or whatever it was just a, you know, non-organized tally sheet of just different lyrical things. Uh-huh. That the two of us would put in, and you know, we started it like right away. As soon as we were like, okay, we're gonna have a band and we're gonna write a record, we kind of just like started compiling this thing. And so by the time, you know, we got together with the whole band, this thing was pretty fucking expansive. It probably was like 15, 20 pages probably.
Wow.
And so, you know, so when the five of us got together and we started like going through the music and starting to like really like hash out these songs and turning these, you know, these ideas that Rain and I had. And I mean, Holly also brought in songs for sure when she came in. So when we started going through all these things and building songs out of it, you know, when we would have like dinner breaks and stuff, you know, we would talk about what it is that, you know, Rain and I were kind of putting together. And, you know, we're thinking maybe some stuff is like coming from this side and some stuff is coming from that side or whatever. And just like, had a conversation about this with all five of us, and it was right. Like, you know, what, how do we feel about this thing or that thing or whatever? And then that was where that's when we were like, okay, now at least we have like a general idea of where we're coming from.
Right.
And so we started going through our this big fucking document and starting to like find things and put them together. And it's like, you know, what happens if, you know, what does everything mean if you take this melody and assign, you know, this sentence from this stanza and or these words from this other page or whatever? And it's just a big mix and match thing, trying to figure out, you know, what means what, you know. And and that's kind of where it went. You know, we specifically try to keep things like mildly vague and abstract, because again, we didn't want it to be something that was like, we didn't want to hit anybody over the head with anything. You know, we really wanted there to be room for listening to the album and being immersed in it and, you know, letting these lyrics swirl around you and mean whatever it needs to mean at that moment, you know, instead of it being so specific, you know?
Right.
You know, it like just keeps things more loose, and it makes it so when you listen to the record, it can mean something different each time if you really wanted to. And, you know, and we also really were into the thing of, and it kind of accidentally happened, of just like, you know, Raina would sing a verse and I would sing a different verse. And like sometimes like with different melodies or the, you know, and then coming together on a chorus or, you know, there's a lot of like switching off between the male and a female lead.
Totally.
Which, you know, again, which was just kind of a happenstance. It just like happened. Like, you know, like, you know, she wrote a verse for a tune, and I was like, oh yeah, you know what? I also wrote a verse for that song. Like, you know, like we would just be working separately, and I'm like, okay, well, let's just use both, and you know, you sing one, and I'll, you know, like type of thing, and it's cool like that. You know, it feels nice to have those two voices in there, and so, you know, so listeners can grab onto what they want to grab onto. You know, it's like, if you want to hear this song and hear it, that it's, you know, you want to apply that it's from a feminine point of view, you can do that, you know,
right.
And you can, or if you want it to be a male, you could do, you know, it's like you have, everybody has the options to apply it from different things, you know, and yeah, I mean, I think that was like an important thing for us.
It's also good songwriting, right? I mean, being able to not necessarily tell listeners what they should be thinking, but to let them, allow them to interpret kind of the art in whichever way they can and make that lasting is probably the sign of a good song.
I mean, yeah, for sure. But I mean, I'm not saying the other way isn't a good song, you know?
No.
Springsteen,
yeah, of course.
You know, he definitely is like, hey, this song is about a guy that works in a factory.
No,
that
I get it.
Doesn't make it a bad song.
No. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. It's different.
You know, it's just what you're going for, you know?
Right.
And it's, that was like our MO was to make something in that way, you know, like to, you know, I don't know, man. It's just like there's so much fucking ego and narcissism in the world right now, especially yeah. in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
It felt like the right thing to do to not make it about
anyone or everyone.
You know,
right.
And that to not. Yeah, like it's like, you know, I don't know.
How much recreational drug use was in use during the making of this record? Because we've heard stories of crazy nights of LSD. Was that just
crazy nights? Look, here's the thing, man. You know, when we get asked, I got asked about how the record was made, and I was just honest about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it's not like, you know, there wasn't like an ether frolic where, like, you know, we're like some, like, Eyes Wide Shut fucking party. You know, it's like.
Right. It's just happenstance.
You know, I mean, Rain and I are two very different people. And, there's a big age gap between the two of us. And, mm-hmm. and she was kind of like getting into and introduced to LSD over the last few years. I hadn't done it since 2000, I think.
Wow.
Because I did, I mean, I used to live on that shit when I was a teenager. So, you know, it was just like a thing where, and then like this microdosing thing became like a thing,
right?
You know, it kind of came into, you know, what was going on. And I was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense.
Uh-huh.
You know, not eating acid by the bucket, but, you know, like, cause I mean, that's what I used to do when I was younger. I would,
right.
You know, I mean, like, hey, you know, I wanted to see how far I could go. You know, I wanted to like, you know, get in it. It was like, remember that movie Flatliners?
Of course.
Yeah, that's how I was with acid. Like, you know, I it's like, okay, well, let's go a little bit further this time, a little bit further,
right.
And you know, I mean, that, obviously that can get fucking weird. But anyway, yeah, so like this microdosing thing became like a thing, and that kind of made a little more sense or whatever. So when we were getting together to do the record, I kind of like had it in my head that I was open to the idea of using LSD again. You know, and like I said, it had been almost 17 years since the last time I did it.
Right.
So Raina was just like, hey, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, take some acid next time when we go in the studio. I was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, so we met up and went into the place and
there you go.
And it was just cool. It was cool. It was a cool experience. And, you know, again, me being me and not, you know, being a master of moderation, it was like, okay, well, you know, like I immediately remembered, you know, like as soon as I, you know, like I was microdosing and I had a little bit of that feeling that you get, you know, and I was like, oh, right, I fucking love this. So the microdosing turned into macrodosing and just like basically just regular dosing at that point. And then, yeah, like a couple times a week for a few months, we would trip and meet up in our studio and just work, you know, just sitting there and play. And we recorded like pretty much every second we were in there. So there's a lot of just nonsense.
Right.
But through the nonsense, there was some great shit. And, you know, we, you know, keep your hands to yourself, came out of that, and you know, a lot of like the song Best Kept Secret, and you know, it was just great. You know, Isosceles came out of that, which is probably my favorite song on the record. You know, I think they're cool songs, and yeah, that's just kind of where it went.
So let's get into the songs, because time is our enemy, and there are 9 tracks on the record. Some of them are instrumental, and some of them, like you mentioned, have lyrics, and they are all Ghostlight songs. I mean, you know, the 5 of you, if it were any different 5 of you, I don't know if this would be the band, obviously. And I think, you know, Raina and Tom on your own, I don't think this would be the band. So it really is, you can tell that it's a group effort and a group think sort of going on. Elegy is the opener, and it's this dark, trippy thing that starts off with Holly's great playing, and then Raina does this huge vocal thing at the end. I mean, it is the scene setter for the entire record, although it's pretty dark, right? I mean, it's pretty dark and trippy, and yet it is the opener for the record.
Yeah, you know, I kind of just wanted it, you know, or I mean, it was just kind of like this thing of like lulling you in.
Right.
Kind of like a false sense of security almost, because, you know, when the next track hits, it hits you pretty good.
Right. So Don't Come Apart Just Yet, My Dear, is the next song. And you're not known for rock anthems, but if you were, this would certainly be part of that. I mean, it's a rock tune, and it does wake you up and get you going. And it is so juxtapositioned from Elegy. I mean, it really, you just get right in there, right? Do you have something to say else about?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, that tune, it's, you know, so when I was making the last American Babies record, my writing partner, this guy, Pete Tramo, who we, you know, he's like, we have a studio together, and, you know, the last, he's worked on like most of my record, like the last like 4 records I've done, you know, we've done together. When we were writing for the last Babies record, the Epic Battle one, there was a point where we had, I don't know, like 12 songs or something, like 12 demos of songs, and 6 of them kind of fit together, and the other 6 fit together, but they didn't all fit together as a unit, so it was like 2 very different albums, basically.
Right.
And we had a pick. You know, we're like, okay, we gotta pick which one of these we're gonna do, and then finish writing that album. You know, so we made the record we made, but on the other side there was these other songs that we kind of just put away for a while. And Don't Come Apart, like the majority of that, the bulk of that was from back then. You know, so I mean that song's 5 years old.
Right.
And I just didn't understand it at the time. You know, I didn't understand what it was, what it meant, where it could go, the possibilities of it. It like, I knew it was a cool idea, but I just, you know, wasn't, I guess, just prepared then.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was listening to a lot of like Brian Jones, Town Massacre and shit like that.
Right.
And you know, you can kind of feel it in there, you know?
Yeah.
So when we started going through, you know, all like, you know, going through old demos and coming up with ideas for this record, I found that, and I was just like, oh, I'm ready for this one. I remember this one.
Right.
And yeah, that kind of just kind of came together pretty quick. You know?
It does have this eclectic thing going on where there are so many influences. Your influences, Raina's influences, Holly's influences, the rhythm section's influences, that it really does. I mean, the roadmap to getting to these songs must have been extraordinary. Diamond Eyes is the only acoustic song on the record, and Raina absolutely shines with her vocal performance, and the breakdown is hilarious. Not hilarious, but a lot of fun. And then it has this R&B Sade feel to it, and I don't know if I'm crazy, but that's kind of, I kind of got that out of Raina's performance a bit near the end. And I don't know if it's the melody or the performance, but it does have like a, to me at least, this Sade feel to it. Am I crazy?
I mean, that's a funny thing to bring up. I mean, hey man, again, you get to think what you want, man. You know, right. That's your thing. I mean, and that's hilarious. I mean, we certainly weren't listening to Sade.
Right. You know, okay. Cool.
Record. But like, you know, yeah, I think that's a beautiful song. You know,
it is gorgeous.
That was, you know, Raina came in with those chords and the whole thing, and you know, yeah, we just kind of fucking put it together, and you know, like that's a good example of like, you know, she had the chord thing, and then, you know, her and I worked on it. We got it to a pretty solid point. Then we brought it into the band, and then, you know, the band was like, okay, let's, you know, flush it out even more. And then we got to, you know, then like, I think it was Holly was like, well, you know, this needs some kind of bridge section that should be like, right, a little more crooked. And then, you know, that was like, oh, okay, cool. I hear what you're looking for. And then, you know, so I wrote this bridge, you know, I wrote that bridge riff, and you know, which is like, all right, so let's, you know, do this on the piano and see what we could do around that. And then, yeah, we kind of just like riffed around that for a while. And, you know, I mean, it's like, it was like, you know, we all kind of do the thing, you know, and like, right, and then by the end of it was a better song than it was before, you know, and that's what you hope for.
Absolutely. Isosceles, you mentioned it's your favorite song on the record. And so here I am listening to it, and all of a sudden I hear xylophone, and I'm like, whoa, like in a very strange kind of way, it harkened back to some Zappa stuff, just, you know, where you're not sure, thinking that stuff's going to show up. And there's so many things going on this track, between the roads, the xylophone, your big solo. It's just, it's a beautiful piece that has so many different parts, and yet it all comes together in this neat little package.
Yeah, man, that was like, I don't know, I think it's just so interesting, and you know, it feels very original. You know, like, yeah, that, like, I don't know many songs that sound like Isosceles. And that's like really what, you know, that's like really what we were looking for the whole time, is trying to make songs that, you know, just trying to not to make shit that sound, that you could be like, oh, that sounds like this.
Right.
You know, like, if anything, you're going to have to name 17 fucking things to say what it is. And at that point, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, whatever. You can, you know, you could compare anything to anything, but like, you know, it's just, that was just the goal, was just try to not make something that sounds like somebody else. Like,
well, it sounds, you know, like Ghostlight. I mean, that's like what you guys sound like, right, now, right?
That's what that's what you're going for, you know? Right. It's like, so yeah, I really do. I love that track. I love the way it came out. You know, our studio had the guy that owns the building, or owns the studio, a friend of his was like an orchestral percussion teacher,
right,
and he retired and needed a place to put all this shit. So our studio had like these marimbas and concert fucking, you know, xylophones and vibraphones and all this shit, timpani. And we're just like, you know, we had it at our disposal. So it was like, all right, well, we got to use this shit because, right, it's cool. And like, you know, it's ways to make something sound bigger and heavier, but without relying on like distortion,
right,
you know,
and tons of overdub. It was
like
a
thing,
that,
yeah, I mean, I've said it before, well, yeah, I said before, like, I said before I'm sure it probably got over to you, but it's like, you know, a lot of the thing was like, I was listening to a lot of like riff rock, I was listening to a lot of like Soundgarden and fucking Sabbath and, mm-hmm, and like old Ozzy, and it was like, you know, how do you make, I mean, that stuff is like, it's good fucking music. It just is. It's just, you know, objectively fucking good and, mm-hmm, interesting. But it's like, you know, A, it's already been fucking done. But B, it's like, okay, well, how can you take that and apply it in a different way? And it's, you know, like, how can you make something that is like, that has cool riffs and like moves and is heavy, but isn't, you know, centered around fucking huge distorted guitars?
Right.
And, you know, for us, it was like, okay, well, you know, what do we do if Sufjan Stevens made a Soundgarden record?
Right.
You know, and that's kind of where it was. It's like, right, that makes sense. Use all this orchestral shit. You know, like, I mean, I love that Illinois record he made, Sufjan, that is.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of my favorite albums ever, you know, and it's like, okay, cool. Like, that's, you know, that's that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he went. So that's why, like, you know, yeah, you have those, you know, like the marimbas on things, or xylophones and vibes, or flutes and clarinets and you know, saxophones and all this shit. It's like, there's ways to do bigger sounding things that don't have to just be a fucking, you know, a fuzz pedal.
Right. Let's keep going here, because we have a couple more to get through, and then I have a few things to finish off. Beyond Before, it's just a gorgeous instrumental that builds and builds, and then the payoff is triumphant, is what I have here. That's got to be hard to pull off, like, in a live setting over and over again. I mean, just the energy of it all, and you have been.
Yeah. Yeah, that I love that one. That's like a, you know, it sounds like a fucking, like a Tarantino Western or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. The film score. For sure.
Yeah.
And
that was like one of the things that kind of helped shape the idea of like having, of it being okay to have instrumental tracks on the record, you know, because it was like, you know, that piece was just something where it's just like, man, that's just not putting any kind of vocal on that, which we tried, just took away from it, you know, it didn't help it. So, you know, anyway, Ed, sorry.
Keep Your Hands to Yourself, just good old rock and roll song, but lots of sounds, but it's still pretty sexy. And your tone in particular does have that jam band influence sound, I think, on this track, which makes sense. I mean, you do play that kind of music from time to time, and it makes sense that that pedal or whatever you're doing shows its head, right, in that song.
Sure, I guess. Yeah, I didn't really hear it that way, but, you know, that was a big, like, you know, Raina and I kind of tripping out, and, you know, she just kind of started playing this, like, the two chords that are, like, make up the verse, and, you know, we just recorded, you know, her playing the guitar and me playing the drums, and we just kind of recorded that for, like, a while, and then we, like, went back and then just overdubbed a bunch of vocals on it, you know, just us, like, improvising just melodies and stuff, and we were able to go back with, like, clearer heads, you know, the next day or whatever, next week, and then start picking it out. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So, you know, these melodies are all useful, you know? And it was like, okay, well, we could use this for reverse. We could use that for the chorus. We could use this as a horn line, you know, yada, yada, yada. And that's just kind of how we built that track out, you know?
I guess just your tone in particular, that's all that jam band thing was, is that your tone was there.
Oh, okay, that's it. Yeah, interesting. I didn't, I didn't.
You didn't pick that.
I didn't hear that, but that's cool. Yeah.
If Only For Now, another scene setter, but it's this atmospheric jam, and, you know, I have this LSD infused kind of thing, because it is pretty psychedelic, I think. Door to a Silent Chamber is this thing where it's you, it's her, it's a beautiful duet. It really is about the song in its entirety and the performances. That's the trifecta, right? The song itself, the lyrics, and the performance. That's what you're shooting for.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a Holly song. You know, she that was one of the things she brought in, and you know, it was a different piece that she had, but we kind of grabbed on to like a couple of the sections, and we're just like, okay, these are, you know, really great. Let's explore these. And And, you know, she really had some great stuff there. You know, yeah, it was like a definitely like, you know, it takes a village thing, you know, everybody dug in and really checked out, you know, got into their parts and helping shape the form of the tune. And, yeah, it was really great. It was a great experience writing that song.
Best Kept Secret is the first quote unquote single from the record, Best Kept Secrets. It's smooth, but sneaky, crafty. And there's the xylophone again, or the marimba, whatever. Definitely some percussion. Why did you decide that, other than it sort of being the title of the record, why did you decide that should be the lead for this record?
I think it's the most, I think it's the thing that represents us the best.
Right.
you know, it's, I mean, you know, we obviously had quite a few songs to choose from, and I just collectively, we were all kind of just like, that's the tune. Like that's the definition of us, or at least right now, you know. And I mean, also for me, you know, I mean, like when I first started writing shit for this record, that was the first thing that like, I like, you know, wrote specifically for this band. Like I had a day in the studio, with my writing partner Pete, and this was like months before Ghostlight was a thing. And it was just like, we just went in, I was like, yeah, I got some shit in my head, and I want to just kind of demo it out. And that was like the first thing, you know, and that's like where kind of a lot of the ideas came from. Like, you know, like the whole idea of like that Soundgarden Sufjan thing, and,
right.
And, you know, like all that shit, it all came from that day and that demo, and, you know, and then Rain and I, that was a song that we spent a lot of time on. Again, that was one of the first things, you know, when we started having those writing sessions, when we were taking LSD and stuff, and we played that opening riff, we played that for, there's a recording of us playing that for like 2 hours somewhere, you know, we just over and over, just playing it. And it would just constantly be like slowly changing in feel and groove, and, you know, like that's why the ending of that song is what it is, like how it gets that really heavy, slower thing that happens when it hits like a fucking ton of bricks, because that's where we ended up at one point when we were doing the stuff. And we're like, man, it's such a different song when you play it that way, but it's a really cool song. How do we like use both, you know? And that's the solution we came up with, was using both, you know, like that, of just like, okay, let's drop into it like it's a fucking, you know, like we're the Sword or one of those, like, you know, heavy Sabbath sounding bands.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, man, it's like that was the first song written for the record and the last one finished. Like we were writing lyrics while we were fucking recording the vocals. You know, that was like the last song we finished. And yeah, it just felt right, man. It's a, you know, I mean, that's, I think it's a, super, again, it's like not something that you can say, oh, that sounds like
right, nobody,
one thing, you know.
Yeah,
so
if the studio is the incubator for the sound and really getting you guys together as a band, the road must be the lifeblood. The musical banter of each member on stage combined with the energy of the fans has come through in all of the live recordings that I've heard, and we're grateful that you make those available. That's just very cool that you do that as a band. And then you are hitting the road. I mean, you know, this is like you said, you're working hard, and for much of March and April and well into festival season, this is your life now.
Yeah. Yep. That's accurate. You know, I mean, it's, you know, making art, man, you know, original music, it's a really important thing to all of us. And you know, we're just out there doing the thing and fucking grateful that people give a shit.
Well, they certainly do. They certainly do. Is there, you know, I mean, you've played all, so many of these places before and so many of these festivals before. Is there anything that you're more excited about than anything else? Or is it just the group, the five of you being out on the road, that's exciting and fueling you at this point?
Yeah. I mean, dude, yeah, it all excites me, dude. You know, like, yeah. I just like playing music, you know, it's right. Like, you know, I mean, and honestly, sometimes I don't even know if it's like a like thing as much as it is, I just need to, you know, it's a vocation, you know,
right.
Like it's a calling. I can't, you know, it's like, you know, I love being home and like hanging out and being a homebody and hanging out with my girlfriend and our cool apartment. It's awesome. I love that shit. But like, I need to play, you know, I need to be creating, you know, and doing that thing of, you know, improvising and having that conversation with like-minded people. It's, I, you know, Yeah, man. I mean, you know, personally, I've been doing that since I was 12. I I'm like institutionalized. I need that in my life. So, you know, whether it's, you know, J-Rad or Ghostlight or any, you know, the other small things I get to do, which I'm very lucky about, you know, I just fucking love it. I love it all.
Cool. Thanks for taking the time. I know you're on the road and I know that, either you are in travel or you have traveled already today. So, thanks.
You're about 5 minutes away from a sound check. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, say hi to the guys, and thanks for doing this, and we'll be watching that other band tonight, man. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Take care, man.
So, I think the dude likes to play music. That's the takeaway. He's original for sure, and the music he makes is about art, but so much more, including his and his bandmates' collective personality and talent. I can tell you that I haven't listened to much else save for a couple of J-Rad shows since we got Best Kept Secrets in our hands. You'll definitely want to pre-order it at ghostlightband.com and check them out on the road over the next couple of months. Those dates are also available on the website. Before we leave you, have a listen to this live performance of Keep Your Hands to Yourself into Head Over Heels, back into Keep Your Hands to Yourself, a performance from Ghostlight's December 30th, 2018 show at the Sony Hall in New York.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.